I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You know, Chinese people actually really love to brag about the deals they got. If you think about it, in the US, if I bought my new Jordan's shoes on like Black Friday and I got a 50% off, I would never tell people I got my, you know, Jordan's 50% off, right? So I just got new shoes. But in China, if my mom literally saved like $10 on her groceries, she'll be bragging about it for like a whole week.
Right.
So the cultural, like the slight cultural nuances really made it work really well for us in Asia.
That was Lin Dai talking about the nuance between cultures. And in that particular case, he was talking about China and the United States. His story is pretty fascinating to me. He grew up in China, but he always had a capitalistic mindset. And having to know how to navigate that at a very young age in a country that wasn't as capitalistic was an interesting experience for him. It also led him down the path where he was recruited to be part of this amazing company, which is Hooch, and it's a location-based subscription drinks mobile app. Now, even if you don't drink, I don't drink, for example, I think his story of how he basically sought to understand the audience and how he moved into the different environments, how he recruited partners, how he created relationships is one that I think every entrepreneur should learn. You know, entrepreneurship is about understanding the people you're serving. It's about the relationships you build around that. It's also about making sure that you're able to be showing up for them, right? So I hope that as you listen to this, you're taking notes and you're applying it to yourself. Also, he's a really nice guy, so if you do listen to the episode, make sure to shout him out on social, Twitter, Instagram, and make sure you at both of us. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Enjoy the episode and send me your notes on how you feel like you're gonna launch your business based on his process. Check it out. Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads. Today's episode is with Lin Dai. Lin is an entrepreneur and digital executive with over 15 years of experience. He's currently the CEO and co-founder of Hooch App, the first membership cocktail app where members discover hundreds of top bars and restaurants around the world. We're going to be talking about his entrepreneurial journey, as well as what Hooch App does, and really just how he personally connected across cultures and how he's revolutionizing the cocktail industry with his app. Welcome to the show, Lin.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure is mine. And now, obviously, I was going through your bio, and then there are a lot of things that you've done, and we'll dive into that in an interview. But I'm very curious about your beginnings. You know, where did you initially start coming up with all these concepts, and what was young Lin like? You know, what was young Lin like, and how did that lead to who you are today?
Yeah. This is a really interesting story. So, I was born in communist China. I grew up in Shanghai, and you know, in kind of the 80s, I was going through school in Shanghai, and you know, as a young kid, I would bring candies to school, and sell them. You know, it's kind of like I'll buy Starburst and sell individual pieces for kind of to my schoolmates. And I actually got caught by the teacher, and they said, like, you know, it's a big no-no in communist China, if you can imagine. And I didn't understand why, because like, you're making a profit on candy at a very small age. And, you know, my parents had to give me a big talk about, like, you know, my teacher was saying, like, you know, I have capitalistic tendencies, which was a very bad thing to have growing up as a child in communist China.
Wow.
So fast forward, my father is a quantum chemistry professor, and he moved to United States to do his research, and yeah, my mom moved out with him. So at age 12, I moved to Arizona and enrolled in American public schools, mm-hmm. and high school, and eventually, you know, it was really eye-opening that there was kind of elective courses in China. There weren't, you follow this, everybody followed the same curriculum. You know, I was able to take a lot of computer classes, and then, you know, eventually also kind of in high school, intro to business classes. I really kind of gravitated towards both computer and business, and ended up going to attending Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh early on with a double major in computer science and business. So learned a lot there. You know, I was a nerd and met a lot of other really smart nerds, and kind of my first real company we formed out of my dorm room. And we ended up building a website for teenagers, and that eventually became kind of the first ever social network for teenagers. You know, we had about 2 million teens on our site in 1999, which is about pretty much every teen that was online at that point. it kind of grew from there. You know, the company grew really fast. You know, we learned a lot on the during the first dot-com boom when everything was going up. And then, you know, learned a lot when the market crashed. I eventually went over to a few major media companies, such as MTV, and then eventually ended up at Alloy. So Alloy was interesting. It was a teen media company that, you know, owned a lot of great properties like Gossip Girl and Vampire Diaries. My job was, you know, head of business development, and we kind of really focused on how to build a digital business for the company, for a major media company. So we did a lot of product building in-house, and also did a lot of digital mergers and acquisitions. So we bought a lot of great digital companies. So great experience there. And after that, you know, I kind of got a little tired of working in teen media. I was recruited by a great radio group, MS Communications, that own Hot 97 in New York, mm-hmm. and Power 106 in LA, the greatest radio hip-hop brands. So I did a lot of great work there, building a lot of digital content and live stream, and negotiate a lot of great partnerships with Beats Music, which eventually became Apple Music. You know, all the while working for these big media companies, I really wanted was kind of get back into the entrepreneurial world, and had an opportunity about, you know, I think close to 6 years ago to join a great mobile video startup out of Canada that I thought was interesting. Was pretty much a predecessor to what eventually Instagram Video became. And the company is Keek, and you know, I went there and worked with a great group of a team. I joined a company as a chief marketing officer, and worked with the marketing team, did a lot of great celebrity endorsement deals. And growing that company to about 75 million users worldwide. So the company was taken public on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And this was about 3 years ago. You know, I really thought that, you know, it's time for me to kind of, I took a half step into helping a startup grow to be really successful, and I really wanted to start my own project. So came back to New York, met up with my two current co-founders. They were already kind of incubating this idea and building a prototype for this universal drink ticket app. So I thought it was really interesting. So In New York, if you go to a nice club or bar, if you know the owner or manager, or sometimes if you know the doorman, they'll give you a paper ticket. So it, you know, you give that paper ticket to a bartender, and they'll just make you a drink. So I thought two things was very interesting about that model was, one, doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, everybody loves a free drink. You know, I literally saw some of my wealthiest hedge fund friends are just like so excited to like wait to exchange their paper ticket into a free drink. So that was interesting. So getting a drink is really not perceived as a discount behavior. It's really kind of an aspiration. You got taken care of by the bartender. And the second thing was really interestingly, you know, selling alcohol at a premium bar is really the highest markup from wholesale to retail of any legal product there is. It costs a bar less than $20 to purchase a wholesale 1 liter bottle of Grey Goose from the distributor, and they can make 26 drinks with that one bottle. So it technically costs them less than a dollar to make a drink, and they're selling it, they're charging at a nice place $15 to $20. So we came up with a subscription cocktail app model where consumers pay $10 a month. They can get one free drink every single day at any of our top, you know, hundreds of locations across 10 cities. So you can go to the Dream Hotel, you can go to STK, you select from our in-app digital menu of cocktail options, you show the redemption screen, you just get a free drink. So we keep the, for consumer, you can get, for $10 a month, you can get 30 free drinks. That's about $500 worth of premium cocktails. For the bars, once you get in the door, you're not going to just have one drink. You're going to purchase additional drinks and food, and you're probably not going to drink by yourself. You're going to bring some friends over. So the average purchase is end up being, you know, $30 to $40 additional purchases per on average. And our consumers spend another hour, 20 minutes per visit at the bar. And for Hooch, we keep the $10 a month subscription revenue. So it's kind of a win-win-win for all parties.
Yeah, so there's so much to unpack there. Wow. So where do I even start? Let me start off. You had a capitalist tendencies in a communist country, you said. That was your first introduction, you said, to even this business. Where do you think that came from?
I don't know. Sometimes you're just born with it, right? So I was a, you know, there's definitely no classes or nobody teaching me to, you know, buy a pack of candy and unpack it and selling individual pieces for more money than what I bought the bag of candy for. But So
it wasn't even like your parents taught you, because you were saying, because your parents were even telling you that you shouldn't do that. So that's definitely the definition of born entrepreneur. So anyone listening out there, sometimes, a lot of times, obviously in an environment you're in might not, you know, create a suitable environment for you to do what you want to do. But it's interesting to note that you said you've always had that tendency. So were you able to immediately note the difference once you started to shift environments to see which environments worked for you to sort of explore your entrepreneurship?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't even know what that word meant, right? Until probably it was high school, I started taking, you know, computer classes, and I started taking business classes at public high school in Arizona. So that was really eye-opening for me. And I joined in retrospective, very nerdy group called the Future Business Leaders of America. It's kind of an after school program. We have competitions, and you go to these competitions. I was really good at math. So there was a lot of business math competitions, accounting competition that I will always win. And then eventually, my senior year in high school, there was a kind of entrepreneurship competition. So I had to put together a team of other kids in my high school, and then we would kind of argue a business case and present to a group of adults, kind of like a very early on Shark Tank, right? Like for kids. And then we ended up winning at the state level, number one in Arizona State, and ended up winning number two nationally, in entrepreneurship competition. So I was like, wow, this is really fun, right? So it's not just doing math and accounting, it's really kind of creatively think about how to build a business and present a plan. So after I went to college, I, specifically took a lot of entrepreneurship classes, and, there was definitely a lot of great professors that Jack Roseman from Carnegie Mellon University was really a great entrepreneur himself, and he was a professor, and he was like really taught us a lot and encouraged us to not, not just go the corporate route, right? So, all of us that went to, some of the top schools are still like kind of the mentality is like go work for IBM, go work for Goldman Sachs after you graduate, which a lot of my classmates did. I ended up starting my first company out of my dorm, which is another kind of exciting way. And I think now, almost 20 years later, it's so exciting to see there's another huge wave and it's just a whole generation of young professional who really prefer to work on their own companies and their own projects versus going to the corporate environment, right? And right. Corporations are trying to be more entrepreneurial, and they're ditching their headquarters and they're moving into WeWork, and they're trying to set up like kind of innovation center. So it's all going towards more and more entrepreneurial kind of economy.
Yeah, no, we are 100% right. And one of the reasons I was fascinated with your story, I was saying before we even got on to record, is that I did a lot of research on you, and you started off with the story on China. But the interesting thing is that your first international market is Hong Kong, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And you have a crazy story with this. Like tell the story about the friend you met from Red Bull and just how that just came about.
Yeah. So we launched in New York and quickly expanded to LA. So those are kind of very obvious markets, in the US. And, we're very early on. And then I ran into one of my friends at a wedding, Danny, and he was at the time head of marketing for Red Bull out of Hong Kong. So I showed him the app and what we're doing, told him we're very early on, and, he went back to Hong Kong and he called me and he was like, wow, I can't stop thinking about this. And I'm going to go quit my job today because you are making me GM for Hooch Hong Kong. I was like, crazy. Don't quit your job. There's no Hooch Hong Kong. I can't afford to set up an international market. Like, don't do it. And he's like, no, don't worry. Like, I really believe in a project. And you don't have to pay me until, the market start to generate revenue. So I was like, wow, so he did a lot of work. And then obviously he has a lot of great connections with top bars being running Red Bull for many years there. So that was a great get. And that was someone who, has been in the corporate environment for so long that really wanted to take a chance and get excited about an entrepreneurial project. And he joined and really made Hong Kong a great market for us. And we saw basically, very uniquely about Hong Kong is we saw user adoption, user-to-user referrals, and organic virality is super high, and we couldn't figure out why for a while. Another interesting story is, I was talking to my wife, and my wife is Brazilian, but she's in real estate, and she took my last name, so she's in real estate business in New York, and all her clients are a lot of Chinese and Asian clients who basically look up her name and thought she's Chinese. So she deal with a lot of Chinese customers. So she tells me, she's like, it's very actually simple explanation. Chinese people actually really love to brag about the deals they got. If you think about it, in in the US, if I bought my new Jordan's shoes on like Black Friday and I got a 50% off, I would never tell people I got my, you know, Jordan's 50% off, right? So I just got new shoes. But in China, if my mom literally saved like $10 on her groceries, she'll be bragging about it for like a whole week.
Right.
So the cultural, like the slight cultural nuances really made it work really well for us in Asia, in Hong Kong as our first market. So that became really successful. So we're really happy that, like, you know, one, we decided to take a chance in a market, and two, we had such a great local leadership that kind of took a chance and quit a very well paid job. And as you know, as did I. So I was, you know, when I joined the Hooch team as CEO, at the time I was you know, CMO for a mobile video company that already was public, so on the Toronto Stock Exchange. So I had to, you know, on my honeymoon, tell my wife that I was thinking about quitting my. No problem. So, you know, I was had to tell my wife that on our honeymoon that I was thinking about quitting my public company CMO job to go run the drinking app that's not funded yet. So, because the drinking app is the future. So.
This story is, it blows my mind, and like you said, I was so fascinated with this because I love doing, you know, I run a company that deals with helping people and companies connect across cultures, and that is one of the most important case studies you can figure out with just understanding how different our businesses work differently in different places. For you to be profitable in Hong Kong, you tapped into the idea of a Chinese culture, which is, you said, the idea that, you know, the cultural nuance works in your favor because people like to brag about good deals they get. It's not necessarily the same thing here. And it's you tapping into that was what ultimately led to profitability. And that's something that I feel like entrepreneurs who are looking for international expansion need to start figuring out how to do, is really understanding what makes people tick and what makes people happy.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ultimately, in the culture they're trying to expand into, before they start to just think, I'm just going to apply what I do here, there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you definitely have to kind of understand the local culture very well, right? And then I would say, like, part of it is also just kind of run small tests. There's nothing that prepares you better. You know, you can theorize and all you want, but like actually deploying a small sample test in the target market really will get you a lot more actual data that you know, that will show you the way.
Yeah. No, this is great. This is great. Now, talk to me. Okay, so we talked about obviously the beginnings, the full circle story from China to China, and you know, you coming up with this idea. How did the name even come about? Hooch sounds like a very interesting name.
Yeah. So my co-founders came up with the name. So Hooch is a prohibition era term for illegal whiskey. So we really like that because you know, kind of. Hooch the app was kind of a membership only app, you know, and Hooch the illegal whiskey is something back in the days you had to go to a speakeasy, know somebody, be in the know to be able to get. So we really like that, kind of was a good early name for you know, what kind of was a private cocktail society was our branding for the first couple of years, right? So, you know, what really interested me always about kind of this project was not like the free drinks, right? Despite popular belief, you know, I actually drink far less now. But it's really about kind of how to understand your preference and behavior and data that, you know, shockingly, none of the alcohol company in the U.S. was able to capture. So let's say Grey Goose really knows that Dream Hotel is their top account. They're selling 10 cases of Grey Goose every week. But what they don't know is they don't really know if it's you know, a 40-year-old woman coming in, a bunch of 40-year-old women coming in ordering Cosmopolitans, or a bunch of college guys coming in ordering shots, that's, you know, using their product. There's really no way to for them to know, other than what alcohol industry do is they do this traditional sampling program. They send in, you know, they hire an agency. The agency will hire three girls. The girls will go into a bar and buy everybody a round of drinks, and then they go home and type up a report that says, like, hey, I gave two, you know, Grey Goose martinis to this Asian couple. They look like they're 30 years old, and they said they like the drink, right? So that's the extent of data collection for the entire alcohol industry, which is shocking. And, you know, it's literally close to $100 billion a year business, and this is very antiquated way of tracking data. So we just put the data right in the palm of your smartphone. So you basically select whatever drink you'd like to redeem. We record that. We share that information with the alcohol company, who in turn will identify you as a target consumer and offer you additional deals. So so that we, you know, was really what interested me, and then like really and really looking at kind of the young professional and millennial behaviors, we noticed that our active users are all, you know, 21 to early 30s young professionals with a fairly high household average household income of $150,000 or more. So it's really, so we kind of discovered that and learned that it's really, people are not really using the app to save money on drinks. It's really about discovery. It's about experience. It's about going out. You know, it's great to go to a nice place and not having to pay for your first drink, but people are definitely paying for additional drinks and additional food options. So which led us to kind of really think about like what we are really doing, right? So if you kind of really extrapolate away the kind of the discount and the drinking part, like having a drink is really about connecting people. People are like getting back together into the real world. And we really live in an age now where there's so many great apps that literally delivers a, what I call a couch economy. You're sitting at home, you're ordering like food to be delivered to you. You're ordering every type of product purchase on Amazon to be delivered to you. You're swiping for dates, never having to leave your couch. So, you know, it's very convenient, but we're kind of, we have been taking away a lot of the innate human connection that has existed for, you know, tens of thousands of years that humans, you know, really crave. So we really thought this is Hooch is a great app to that you have to, you know, you do get a lot of great benefits, but you have to go back into the real world to enjoy it. And then that gives you a chance to kind of meet with other people, other Hooch members or other people in general at a bar and socialize and get a little bit back of that human connection. So kind of an extension of that is what we recently launched, Hooch Black, which is a premium tier experience that expands that type of going back into the real world to connect type of idea, right? So there's cocktail deals you can get with a basic Hooch membership. With the premium Hooch Black membership, you also get dining deals, right? You get a round of champagne at Tao when you reserve a table through our in-app concierge, or you get 20% off your bill at STK or Mr. C in Los Angeles or Beverly Hills. And then there's also hotel deals. When you book in-app through our in-app private booking engine, you get access to hundreds of thousands of top hotels in the world at 20 to 60% better rates than Expedia. So it's all about kind of getting you back into the real world, connect, travel, experience. And then there's also events, concerts, a lot of access we provide for you. So we think this is kind of a antidote to kind of all the apps that facilitate a couch economy.
Wow. So I have to sneeze. I've been holding the sneeze here. But what I'm fascinated by with your particular approach is you really, with anything you do, you are eager to figure out what exactly that user experience is like. You know, for what you did here in the US, you understood that generally the venue is risking $1 in marketing costs for potential $30 to $40 in additional sales. And you're helping them with that by, you know, getting your app to get them to get that first drink. And basically, you know, once someone gets one drink, you know, the probability of them getting more rises up. And you're basically making them profit for a lot less of a marketing cost that they normally would have done. And then in China, you figured out that, you know, the love for discounts is actually something to play upon. And then your whole overall brand here is about my generation, our generation, millennials, and the importance of experiences. Can you talk about that importance of understanding truly who you serve? Because I think entrepreneurship is not as many things. One of the most important things is that it's solving problem, but it's also making sure that you ensure that the people you're solving problems for receive the solution that they want to, the way they want to receive that solution. So can you talk about that process?
Yeah, absolutely. So, your users is definitely the number one important piece of your company you should pay attention to, right? So the user experience of your product and the feedback on users is super important. So, you know, we definitely put a lot of emphasis on, you know, from day one when we were developing the app, you know, we all thought it was a great idea, but kind of I was a proponent of, building a great product, but also quickly getting into the hands of users and let them give us feedback on what they really want or need, right? So I think very early on, there was a lot of, there's a few kind of copycat kind of drink subscription app that came out after we did. But, I think the fundamental difference between us and some of the other apps that actually eventually went out of business were we were way beyond about giving away a free drink. So it's really built with kind of the user experience. What do users really want? And we very early on discovered that it's about discovery. It's about experience. It's a whole generation of young professionals that want to go back into the real world and connect with other people or go discover new experiences.
Yeah.
So that is a fundamental kind of mentality that is very different than, you know, so very early on, we decided we're not a free drink app, right? So we are trying to curate an experience and connection and also help brands understand this audience, right? So it's not about like just giving you free, you know, having girls go to the bar and buy everybody free drinks and, you know, write up a report. It's really about like, what is the consumer taste and experience change over time, right? So if you are a, Grey Goose drinker, how do your taste change over time? Like, are you open to also try tequila drinks? And if you try tequila drinks, like, what can we do to enhance that experience, right? So it's really about kind of building a community of like-minded people that like to go out together. So our most successful kind of events and activations is always kind of, you know, we do a big party at South by Southwest each year. You know, we had great artists like Ludacris and Rick Ross and Busta Rhymes. And, you know, this year we have Fat Joe perform. So it's really about getting hundreds of people together and all share the hooch experience. It's not, you know, it's always nice to not have to pay for a drink, but the main part is not about, you know, people are buying four or five more drinks at our events and concerts. So it's really about getting together and, like, you know, connecting with other people that of the similar demographic and really enjoy kind of going out together, right? So, you know, a big challenge with, you know, with successful dating apps, like Tinder and Bumble and all these apps is there's a lot of digital connections in app. But on average, you know, I think the stats is like one in six matches actually result in real world meetups. So that's a shockingly terrible conversion rate, right? So you're really just kind of, swiping on your couch and not really getting that real human connection. So, you know, we're trying to, you know, we think that's kind of a need in, much more than, you know, the need for getting a free drink. The need is to, for the audience to really, having that experience of reconnecting, in the real world.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. So anyone listening, please, just if you can take anything from Lynn's story, it's the idea of risk, understand the market, but also soliciting for feedback. It's always very important to make sure that you understand that. And if you're trying to expand in a new market, understand the nuance between, you know, the markets you're trying to get into is very key. So Hootchap one of your backers is Rosario Dawson, and you've got a huge celebrity following. How did that come about? How did this become something that celebrities really, really liked? Because that's quite an endorsement, first of all, from Rosario Dawson, but then to get even more celebrities involved, that's quite an achievement. Congrats on that. How did you get that?
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, I kind of spent 15 years in music and entertainment at companies like Hot 97 and Alloy that own Gospel Vampire Diary. So I have some connection to start with. You know, part of it is just like kind of very early on, we clearly had this vision of like, this is an app that connects a whole generation of people, right? So back into the real world, we found an audience with, you know, a lot of celebrities. So we had, you know, this singer Maxwell, we had, Tyson Ritter, who's, the front man for All American Rejects. We had Sean White, the Olympic snowboarder, Rosario Dawson. We had, Stargate, the super producers for Rihanna and Katy Perry. So they all kind of really, I think, like, believed in our mission of connecting people through our app. And it's a fun app also, right? So, you know, we work very closely with our lead VCs, and one of them is very connected to Blue Scorpion Investment, who's super connected to a ton of celebrity and music and entertainment world who made a lot of the introductions, which is great. Like, you know, we really loved our investors and VC to be very involved with the company. We're gonna actually we're really super happy to announce a major partnership next week with one of the biggest music labels in the world. So we'll actually do a lot more celebrity partnerships, because we think it's a great way to, you know, celebrities have the reach and power to really kind of bring the message to their followers, to really kind of go out there and connect and do something.
That's amazing. No, congrats on that. And I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about that, because that's been incredible to see your rise and just what you've done with that. So congrats on that. And
thank you.
Looking forward to this. So where can the audience find out more about Hootchap? What's next? And, you know, how can people reach out to you?
Yeah, so absolutely. So if you are living in any of our top 10 cities, you can go get the Hooch cocktail subscription on hooch.co, hooch.co, and you can find out, or you can just search for the app in the App Store. And if you live anywhere else in the world, you can upgrade basically to the Hooch Black membership, which covers hundreds of thousands of hotels and restaurants, not only in our top 10 cities, but pretty much everywhere in the world. So Hooch Black membership is $295 a year, which comes out to be about a little less than $25 a month. And you can get, you know, hundreds of dollars of savings every time you book a hotel at 20 to 60% better than Expedia rates. So you can go check that out at hoochblack.com. Yeah, download the app, play with it, and hopefully you'll encourage you to go out into the real world and schedule a happy hour or get together with your friends or go meet some new friends.
Yeah, no, can't wait. This is good. I'll make sure I put all that in the show notes so we can definitely we can definitely get that. So before we go, I always ask my guests this question. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference, right? That's the foundation of everything I do. It really embodies what I believe with cultural competency and personal branding. So how do you use your difference to make a difference?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I'm glad you always ask this at the end of your interviews. So, you know, I think it's really, like, first of all, like, embrace your difference, right? So, and really kind of follow your passion. So this is, you know, as somebody who grew up in China, who would have probably never had a chance to experience, you know, my quote-unquote capitalistic potential, I really embraced it, right? So not knowing so when I was at a young age, and then really had when the opportunity came to learn more about it, you know, I took the opportunity and took classes, you know, in high school and you know, joined very nerdy business clubs, because this is something I'm passionate about, right? So this is kind of a opportunity now that's more accepted than ever for kind of a whole generation of entrepreneur to be entrepreneurs. It wasn't wasn't taboo, but it wasn't like as encouraged as it is today. So I think that is definitely, you know, something that I did that was very different from all my classmates, to kind of give up a really great paying offer from IBMs of the world to pursue entrepreneurship. But you know, the world is your oyster, so it's, you know, your future is what you made of.
Yeah, this is good, and I'm really glad that we had you on here, because you really dove into the nuances of business and the global landscape, but also the importance of taking that leap. And so I'm so glad that you know, you get to be as successful as you are, and I'm glad that it's been validated as well. So looking forward to following your success and the rise of your company, and making sure that, get to share your story as a success story, so people can understand that it's possible for them as well. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tao.
Pleasure's mine. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. And until next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.